You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Very happy to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk a lot of opener fishing topics here because May 9th is the Inland Waters Fishing Opener here in Minnesota. This weekend, May 2nd, of course, is the Inland Waters General Opener in Wisconsin. Greg Berg from the Minnesota DNR is going to come on and talk about Lake Mille Lacs a little bit. They got a meeting this Thursday night, public meeting that we'll talk about, and just talk Mille Lacs in general, a topic I really haven't devoted a specific segment to in many, many years. Then we'll talk with Josh Hagermeister. He's a fishing guide, never been on the show before, and we'll get some general opener tactics with him. I want to kick things off with one and only Tim Lesmeister. Tim, it's good to see you, and a lot going on. There's a lot of headlines this week. You helped out with some of the Outdoor News Daily shorts, including one about a new Center for Biological Diversity lawsuit involving lake sturgeon. They think we need to protect lake sturgeon via the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah, they do. And I often wonder how that's going to affect what's going on right now. In this case, we have lake sturgeon fishing going on Rainy River, which has been really, really good for a while. Is it going to put a damper on that? You've got lake sturgeon spearing that goes on in Wisconsin on one of the big lakes there. Is it going to affect that? Are we going to see some heavy restrictions put on some of the stuff that goes on in the rivers, like on the St. Croix and the Mississippi River? Because sturgeon populations, although they're quite low compared to what they were, 100 years ago, they're coming back, and they're coming back because we've got good management practices now. So is it necessary to put them on the Endangered Species Act? I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe it's something that we need to kick around a lot before we make that decision. And this group doesn't want to do that. They want to get them on there now.
So the topic of the endangered species list comes up a lot. There's folks in Congress, probably within the Trump administration, that want to eviscerate it, feel like it's been abused. And generally speaking, I don't have a problem with most lawsuits involving the ESA, and I don't want to revamp the ESA. I think it's a strong law, maybe a little overly strong. And you can't say that about too many things with the environment these days. So I don't want to change the ESA. That said, I consider this lawsuit completely frivolous and stupid. It's the kind of lawsuit that gives ESA lawsuits a bad name, in my opinion, Tim. Sturgeon are a success story. There's been a lot of work on these fish across the Great Lakes region, and they're coming back. And I see no good in this lawsuit. I think it'll do nothing but probably hinder some of those efforts. It'll probably create conflicts with some of those management efforts. And it just irks everybody. It just makes everybody mad and adds fuel to the fire that we need to revamp the Endangered Species Act. And I don't want to do that. So I don't like this lawsuit. This is the second time they've done this. Dean Bortz wrote the story, and if you read Dean's story, you can kind of tell how Dean feels about it all. He doesn't mince words in his news writing. Yeah, they lost this once before. Go away. There are legitimate species out there that need help. Go help them. Lake sturgeon are a growing success story, and this isn't helping anything.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I think that we've got some great sturgeon fishing going on in the upper Midwest. And I believe that something like this could hinder that dramatically. I'm kind of anti-sturgeon on the species protection list. So I'm thinking maybe we ought to just hope that one goes away.
Yeah, generally, Tim, when lawsuits like this come up about different species, state natural resources departments are kind of mum. They kind of keep their powder dry and don't comment. The Minnesota DNR immediately called this thing not warranted. That means a lot. That I think that's exactly what it is. It's not warranted. So anyway, moving on to other topics, Tim. Our buddies up on Isle Royale, the wolves and the moose, yeah, man, you and I have talked about this topic a lot over the years. The moose population blew up when the wolf population crashed. Naturally, they had parvovirus or something up there that gradually wiped out the wolves. Over the years, that we haven't had as many ice bridges where wolves could get out to the island. So there was no new genetic blood getting out there. And so these wolves were just kind of petering out in terms of genetic vitality. So the moose population blew up. And somewhere along the line, someone said, well, let's stock some wolves out here and see if we can get them reestablished and get this moose population under control. And you and I, you know, debated this. A lot of people debated it. I generally supported it. I felt like this was a cheap way to control the moose population out there. But by golly, amazing how quickly the tables turned.
Boy, it is amazing. You know, just a few years ago, there were 2,000 moose on Isle Royale. And just in this last 12 months, the population has dropped 25%. In the last few years, it's dropped 75%. There's only 525 moose on that island right now. And there's only 37 wolves that are basically out there. And you know, some of the moose are not succumbing to the wolves, but a lot of them are. There's three packs of wolves. There's 10 to 13 wolves in each pack. And man, they're eating well. I would imagine if you were to trap a wolf out there and do some measurements on that wolf, you'd find out they're plenty fat and in really good shape.
It begs the question, what's going to happen next? I mean, it would seem to me that the number of wolves out there can't survive on the remaining moose, that the wolf population is probably going to plunge from starvation pretty soon. They've obviously gotten very good at killing moose. The question, I mean, it's almost to the point, if they've killed 25% of the moose that were on the island in the past year, could they wipe out the moose altogether on that island? I don't know. You look at places like the Slate Islands or some of the Michikopkoten, where there were caribou and a few wolves got out there. And, you know, caribou are smaller. And the wolves wiped out the caribou on those islands. Historically, that did not happen on Isle Royale. You know, they reached a bit of a balance. But we really altered the dynamic by importing wolves from the mainland. I seriously wonder how this is going to end.
Well, I think how it's going to end is how it ended the last time. The wolves are going to knock this moose population down dramatically. You're going to see the wolf population then starting to wane, and it won't be long before there's so few wolves on the island that they are interbred. They'll not do well, and then the wolves will just say to heck with it, and once they get a decent ice bridge, they'll head to greener pastures.
Well, you might be right. Listen, the moose population on that island was too high. I backpacked Isle Royale in the mid-90s when it was about 1,500 or 1,600, and it was too high then. You could tell the browse line was ridiculous. They were overabundant. They were harming the ecosystem. And if they were up to 2,000, man, Tim, it must have been even worse. But yeah, they're trying to have this this natural experiment, and it doesn't feel natural to me anymore.
It's not, and I think you need some human interaction in this equation as well. I think you have to say, okay, this is our perfect moose number. This is our perfect wolf number. And what we need to do is keep that in balance. And sometimes you may have to go in there and cull some wolves, and sometimes you may have to go in there and cull some moose. You know, they don't allow moose hunting on that island. They should.
It's a national park, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, why not? So I just think that it's, you know, kind of one of those things where they want to see how everything balances out on its own. It won't. And so you need to be in there doing some things that are going to maintain that balance.
If the wolf population does go into complete collapse again, like it did the last time, and the moose population blows up, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I did not necessarily support hunting on it last time around. I felt like they should try this experiment. I'm not sure I would feel that way if it happens again. I do feel like moose hunting there would be challenging. in September. You know, that lake really gets rolling. But it would be a fun hunt. But getting a moose off that island, boy, that would be challenging. I don't know if you could get enough hunters in there, because you can't be rolling around there on UTVs. You got to be out there backpacking it. I don't know if you could pull enough moose out of there to keep that population in balance.
You could probably see businesses setting up some guiding operations in there if they would allow some of that to go on. So then the hunters would maintain some of the population. Wolves would maintain some of the population. If the wolves get beyond a certain point, you could cull some of them too.
Well, the Isle Royale epic drama continues.
Yeah, and, doesn't it?
We'll keep listeners and readers posted on that in Outdoor News. Tim, I need to grab a break. You'll be back at the end of the show and help me wrap up.
I will.
That's our buddy Tim Lesmeasure. Thanks, Tim. We'll talk to you later. More of the broadcast after these messages.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. Thanks a lot for tuning in. If you like the content of this broadcast, please check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to the website there and get all the content from Minnesota and across the Great Lakes region and across the country at outdoornews.com. Or you can just subscribe to the print version. That's fine too. Give us a call at 800-535-5191 or again, subscribe at outdoornews.com. I want to devote a segment to Lake Mille Lacs. I don't believe I've done that on this show in a very, very long time. We talk Mille Lacs, of course, about the regulation from year to year, but we haven't really drilled into what's cooking on the big lake in quite a while. I've got a great guest who has not joined me here before. His name is Greg Berg. He's the Mille Lacs Area Fisheries Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. He's been up there a couple of years. He's based in Garrison, Minnesota, and he joins us now. Greg, thanks a lot for joining me. Fairly bright outlook, I think, for Lake Mille Lacs here in 2026 open water season. I presume you agree?
Yeah, thanks a lot for inviting me on the show, Rob. I really appreciate it. Yeah, but overall, you know, there's a pretty good outlook for the lake coming up here for most of the species. For walleyes, things are looking good. We got a fairly liberal limit here to start out the season, so that's encouraging. But yeah, pike are in good shape, perch are in good shape. A lot of forage in the lake right now, so things are looking like they're heading the right direction here.
So we've had treaty co-management up on the lake since the late 1990s. It was about 98, I think, that first kicked in. We've had regulations kind of go up and down. We have a quota, a safe allowable harvest of walleyes on Lake Mille Lacs that we share with the seven or eight Ojibwe bands from Minnesota and Wisconsin. After a few years or several years of a pretty low quota, we've had decent quotas the past couple of years. What are we at this year? How many pounds of walleyes can state anglers take out of Mille Lacs this year?
It's down just a little bit from last year, but the total quota between the bands and the state is 185,000 pounds. The state share of that is 105,300 pounds. 79,700 for the bands.
How does the DNR and the bands come up with that number? Just to kind of refresh listeners' memories.
It's a long process for sure, and it's done on an annual basis, which is unique to Lake Mille Lacs and for Red Lake in Minnesota as well. Each year, you know, there's a committee called the 1837 Fisheries Technical Committee. We basically have a model called a statistical catch at age model that we basically take all of our survey information, age and growth information, catch rate information, harvest information, and a variety of other metrics too that go into these population models, and they estimate it out. So based on that, we're able to take that chunk of harvest out there that makes the most sense.
So the state and bands divide the harvest. I've seen some pictures recently. It sounds like the bands are out doing some of their gill netting now or have been in recent weeks. They take a lot of their harvest via gill net. Is there some spearing? Did some of the band members spear on the lake too?
Yeah, they're allowed to spear and to net. Most of the time, netting accounts for most of the harvest, but spearing is popular for some groups.
When they're able to get out and tackle some of their tribal netting and spearing is contingent on ice out. Was ice out early enough this year that they've been able to knock a lot of that out? Do you expect most of the band activity to be done by next weekend, by the May 9th state opener?
I do, yeah. The ice went out, a little before normal this year, I think, and, pretty normal overall. So they were able to get out there at about the right time, and they're out there right now. And I think we get harvest updates from them, and I believe they're just a little over 50,000 pounds now. So they've got a little ways to go. I feel like probably through the weekend and maybe a tiny little bit next week, and they should be kind of wrapping up.
You know, I get occasional social media posts and emails from folks crabby about the northern pike or whatever that the bands take. And I have my personal feelings about the tribal harvest up there. But I do try to point out to folks that the tribal harvest is very well documented, right? I mean, every fish that take out generally, I believe, is measured and accounted for.
Yep, they have their own creel clerks, per se, that are monitoring the harvest. Each net has a permit assigned to that. And when they bring it back, you know, all the fish are measured and weighed and accounted for, and then, added up at the end of the day. And, and then that's reported to a big group of us as well. So it's very well monitored.
One last question regarding the tribal fishery. I know you've only been the supervisor there for a couple of years, Greg, but I'm curious, what's the sense among the state? Is the tribal fishery, are the bands as interested in fishing Mille Lacs as they were 25 years ago? It's a long way for some of those Wisconsin bands to come over. Do you have a sense of that, or has it been pretty steady?
My sense is that it's pretty steady. We have the Mille Lacs band here. They get the majority of fish. They have to divide their total tribal quota, you know, amongst the tribes too. And then Fond du Lac, which is another Minnesota tribe, they'll probably get the second amount. And then the rest kind of goes to the six Wisconsin bands. And they're the ones that have to travel and things like that. Yeah, I don't really feel like it's going down or going up. I feel like it's kind of pretty steady for them lately. And maybe just a little more, you know, interest in spearing than the netting. And that could be just from younger members or who knows what. But
interesting. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisa, and we are chatting with Greg Berg. He is the Mille Lacs Area Fishery Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about Lake Mille Lacs. So on to next weekend. State anglers have a 3-fish walleye bag, a 17 to 20-inch slot with 1 over 20. Do I have that right?
Yep, you got it.
Okay, and anglers expecting a pretty good bite out there. How did the winter season go for walleye anglers, Greg?
The forage in the lake has been so high the last few years that catch rates for walleye haven't been as good. But one of the things we look at when we're looking for summer catch rates is they're very comparable to winter catch rates. And this year's catch rates for the winter were a little bit better. So I am expecting just a little bit of a bite this year, especially to start out the year in May and June. And after that, it all depends on kind of what kind of a hatch we get for forage, like how many young of the year perch are out in the lake, how many young of the year tulabies, things like that. But I do suspect it'll be a little bit better fishing than the last couple of years to start out the season anyway.
What's the year class strength for walleyes out there? Do we have, you know, several year classes that anglers will encounter when they're dropping a line in Mille Lacs?
Yeah, we do. There's a number of different year classes out there now that are decent. The last really, really big year class was the 2013 year class. So they're getting up there in age now. So those are, you know, largely, you know, over 20 inches and even up to, you know, 26, 27 inches. So there's that. And that fueled the fishery for a long time. Recently, we've also had some modest year classes from 2017, 21, 22. Mixed in there, and there are a lot of fish in that 17 to 20 inch range. More recently, 2 years ago in 2024, there was another record year class of walleyes hatched. So they're still out there, very abundant. So there's something coming in the pipeline there too. So
you feel pretty good about the status of the walleye fishery on the lake. You got multiple year classes there. You got a lot of forage, perch forage out there. So the big walleyes are probably, we hope, munching on the perch, not so much on the little walleyes.
Yeah, that's correct. At times, you know, there can be some predation on walleyes from the bigger walleyes out there too. But there's a lot of perch and tulibee out there now, you know, for them to feed on. The fish are in really good condition, really, really healthy looking. But yeah, hopefully we can continue to get, you know, some of that perch recruitment coming into the system. So that'll help a lot.
Yeah, I talked to you last week and had in my column that the perch fishery has been phenomenal on the lake the past couple of years. We're down to a 5-fish perch bag limit for open water. You guys kicked that in late winter so that we could stay under our quota for perch. And it looks like we're in pretty good shape. We're probably going to stay under that perch quota for this year. Speak, I guess, quickly, Greg, to the perch fishery. What a bonus opportunity that has been for anglers, huh?
Yeah, that's been so great to see. You know, back in the 80s and 90s and even 2000s, you know, you could always kind of count on the perch. The perch fishery is really a winter fishery. We don't really see much for people targeting perch in the summertime and not a lot of harvest in the summertime. But it's definitely, it went down for a while, you know, after we had invasive species come in. And there was just not a lot of recruitment going on with the walleyes or the perch. But recently we've had some surges for both of those species. And now we're seeing some of them making it through the kind of the predation gauntlet and creating, you know, a sport fishery for them, which is nice to see. And it's, like I said, it's been really good for the community the last couple of winters up here. And, you know, hopefully it continues to grow. But it's been good, but it's not quite at the levels it was, you know, 20 years ago or so.
Greg, quick pike question. When spearing became legal on Mille Lacs, again, I was worried about the pike size structure on that lake, which has been phenomenal over the years. It's been a great pike lake. Are you seeing pike size lengths and structure hanging in there?
Yeah, we are. Right away when that spearing came back again, that attracted a lot of people to the lake. On top of my head, I can't remember what the size regulations were then, but they kind of took it to them a little bit out there, and we've seen a little bit of reduction in the number of larger fish. But we have more restrictive regulations out there now, and they've really bounced back. Pike population, very healthy. Size structure, yeah, they're in very good condition too.
Well, Greg, we need to go, but I almost forgot to get to this. You got a special meeting going on, a public meeting for Mille Lacs Lake Fisheries Management for the general public this Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. At the Hazleton Town Hall off U.S. Highway 169 in Aiken. I presume you'll be there and some of your other staff. If folks want to learn more about what you and I just talked about, they're going to have a two-hour opportunity to quiz people like you about how we're managing that lake.
Yeah, that's true. We help per our management plan. That's one thing we do. We try to do it annually here. I think this will be the third or fourth one we've done now. And it's just a way for us to kind of get out and engage with the public, with the anglers. They can kind of meet us, ask questions, you know, just kind of hang out for the evening and learn about how Mille Lacs Lake is managed, about the fish populations. We have a couple presentations to give. Yeah, we'll just be talking all things Mille Lacs and just having some discussions about lake management. It's all about getting out, meeting people, and talking about Mille Lacs.
Encourage folks to attend that, and you can learn more at mndnr.gov/Mille Lacs Lake. Greg, thanks for all you do. Thanks for spending a long segment with me, and good luck. I hope you get out fishing yourself next weekend.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that, Rob. I definitely will be out there. So good luck to everyone, and good luck to you, too.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Berg from the Minnesota DNR. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Here's a way to give back to the future of waterfowl. Volunteer with Ducks Unlimited. From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring critical habitat for nearly 90 years. We're working toward our next million-acre milestone, and we need your help. Whether you're great at selling event tickets, securing donations, lining up sponsors, or pitching in wherever, there's a role for everyone. Join the team that's making a real difference. Head to ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. We are just scratching the surface of what you see or read in the printed edition of Outdoor News. You can subscribe to that at outdoornews.com, and then all of that same content is on our website at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe there or call 800-535-5191. We have got a fishing opener coming up next weekend, May 9th, the Inland Waters opener here in Minnesota. This weekend is the Inland Waters opener in Wisconsin. But hey, it's a bigger deal in Minnesota. Fishing opener is one of the biggest holidays we've got in the state. I wanted to talk with a guide who has never been on with us before, a fishing guide. His name is Josh Hagemeister. He hails from the St. Cloud area. He's been fishing a lot already. He's going to give us an outlook for next week and tell us what's going on out there now. Josh, welcome. Thanks for coming on to the broadcast. And you've been out. You've been enjoying this catch and release bass season a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yes. I've been taking advantage of that, you know, and honestly, who hasn't the last even 10 years? I mean, when you're fishing for crappies and panfish, bluegills, whatever, the incidental bass is part of the program, especially as it gets a little bit further along in the spring. You know, initially there's more crappies and bluegills than just the bass, but as it warms, of course, then the bass are coming in for the same reasons and you catch all kinds of them. But yeah, it's really fun to use. I've been using a lot of combo baits that are kind of geared towards bass and or crappies, you know, little twitch baits, little Rapalas, you know, things that are a little more aggressive than just your basic tube jig or, you know, 2-inch, you know, twister grub type thing. So I've been kind of skirting the line of bass and or panfish baits, and it's been working out quite well. It's been a blast.
Guys that I have been speaking with about the early bass season say you want to slow it down a little bit because these are cold water bass. This is kind of a new phenomenon for at least people who are specifically targeting them.
Yeah, I mean, they're easy to catch through the ice. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been doing bass guided trips for years, but that is a you know, a vertical bait more so, mm-hmm. Versus just a horizontal casting presentation like we're doing now. And so, yeah, you definitely want to slow it down. You don't want to have to use a bait that crawls too fast. I've been using micro crank baits with square bills. You know, these are only about an inch and a half long.
Okay,
real tiny little guys. You know, where a bluegill can inhale the thing, and they're that small. You wonder how they even work when you're on the cast, honestly, but they wiggle, they wiggle and they go down a foot or two, and it's perfect. And everything's eating them up. So
that's fun.
You can pause, yeah. You can crank pause and let it flow around and just kind of dingle dangle around. And yeah, they smack it. You know, they second. How can't they?
You know, we've all seen those tiny little crankbaits and you wonder, well, what do you catch with these? But man, this is prime time to use those. Yeah. You're probably getting into some big panfish as well as these little slower moving bass. That's that sounds like fun. I got to get out there and do that. What's your sense, Josh? Are other people taking advantage of this early catch and release bass season?
I don't think so. I think some people are. Your bass heads are, of course, but a lot of people that know that bass are good table fare when they're in that, you know, 12 to 14 inch range. And I'm one of them that will have no problem eating a cold water bass. A lot of those folks that I've talked to are just going to wait till the opener so they can keep a couple. Okay. In other words, they'd rather just focus on the bluegills and crappies, knowing they can't keep a bass anyway. That's the kind of the feel that I've been getting from the average angler, I guess you'd say. But, you know, my diehard bass head friends, they're out there killing it, taking advantage of it. And, of course, it's a great time of year to catch big old bass that are, you know, pre-spawn, of course. So they're one of the heaviest weights you're going to get.
The catch and keep season for bass is consistent with the normal traditional bass opener this year. It's Saturday, May 23rd for folks looking ahead to maybe put the knife to a few largemouth or smallmouth bass. Tell us how the spring has unfolded, Josh, from your perspective as a fishing guide. It seemed like ice out was in a rush to happen, and that happened quite quickly. And then as we were talking a little bit off air, then it went and got kind of cool in these weeks leading up to the opener. It kind of seems like the calendar is going to be right about where it should be. Speak to the different species, maybe starting with crappies. Have the crappies behaved this spring like you would expect them to in a normal ice out scenario?
I would say they've doing a little more in and out dancing. I would consider a normal scenario, the ice melts within about a week, the water hits, you know, 40 degrees or something like that. And they start to hang around in the shallows, absorbing the sunlight, eating the bugs, you know, that kind of feeding, of course, in there real tight to shore. And they'll hang out there for, you know, a week and a half or two as the water's progressively warm, and maybe go out once or twice back to the deeper water because of a cold front like we've got now, or like we got the other day. And And then going one more time, and then they just seem to stay in there in that, you know, 3 to 6 or 7 foot range where it's a moderate temp. But what I've seen in the lakes I've been kind of fishing around on this spring is a lot more in and out dancing. I mean, you know, back and forth seems to be happening more than normal. That's my observation, at least on the lakes that I've been choosing. And most of them are, you know, shallower, dirtier lakes that are warmer than the deeper clear lakes. Some of those lakes, those fish are just starting to get in good now. But you'll find the masses out in the little bit deeper water, you know, 6 to 12 feet of water. They're not in the 1 to 6 yet. They're in the 6 to 12. So I guess I've seen more of that too.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline. We're talking with Josh Hagemeister. He is a fishing guide out of the St. Cloud area, although he fishes the entire state. You can check out his website, MinnesotaGuideService.com, if you want to get in touch with Josh. All right, Josh, let's talk a little bit about what's going to be happening next weekend. It's the Northern Pike and the walleye fishing opener. As you just described with crappies, what's the status of walleyes and pike in terms of their spawning behavior and their activity level right now?
Obviously, the pike are pretty much done. I mean, the ones that I've caught by accident, crappie fishing or bass fishing, you know, they're obviously in those areas too, and they all look like they've spawned normally to me, at least in the central, the north central part of the state that I've been. The walleye, you know, the hatchery, the egg takes are all happening seemingly on time. So I think it's going to be a normal opener. I mean, really, honestly, water temps are going to be the same, anywhere from the low 50s to potentially 60, depending on how this weather forecast turns out. But I'm anticipating, you know, mid 50s on the lakes that are in the central part of the state and up north. I'm personally going to go south. I'm switching it up this year. I'm going down to where I pheasant hunt, and we're going to be fishing the Prairie Lakes down by the Pipestone area. I expect them to be a good 8 degrees warmer, maybe more, than the lakes that most folks will be visiting.
Josh, I think that's a good plan going south because, I mean, I'm looking at the forecast and I'm seeing 50s, maybe low 60s for daytime highs and a lot of nighttime temperatures in the 40s. I think your water temps there for the Twin Cities North might be a little optimistic. I mean, you know more about it than I do, but I definitely think that plan to head south and find warmer bodies of water is probably a good plan.
Yeah, or head to the river. That's oftentimes overlooked. I mean, really. Perfect spot to head on at midnight, 12:01, be a shoreline on a river.
Okay, so let's say the fish are exactly in the mode that you expect them to be, which would probably be just post-spawn, right? I mean, that's correct. Usually about where we land on fishing opener every year. A lot of people say, you know, the walleyes are a little lethargic immediately after that post-spawn period. Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you target them? You know, in central Minnesota, you're going south, but a lot of guys and gals are going to be fishing their traditional haunts in central Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, to put in perspective, I was out in South Dakota a few days ago for the last, 3 or 4 days, and the walleyes were spawning then, 2 days ago. Water temps were 47 to 51 degrees, and those were fairly shallow lakes. That could be a replay here next week here, like you said. Maybe I was a little optimistic, and I try to be optimistic, we could see a replay of that, and you know, literally the females were dropping eggs on the floor of the boat. And of course, the males were making a mess of everything that we caught, and that could be happening here in Minnesota as well. So don't be afraid to fish. Jigging a minnow, 2 to 4 feet of water could be par for the course, literally. Slower presentations, obviously they can be a little lethargic after during post-spawn. And even while they are spawning, they're busy, of course. And so you really have to bring everything. It's kind of like going on a vacation. You got to bring the warm clothes, the cold clothes, and everything in between. You got to bring the fast-moving baits, the slow-moving baits, the live bait, the artificials. I mean, you got to be ready for any circumstance on opener. In my opinion, Rob, the opening day walleye season opener is one of the most difficult weekends for me as a guide because it's 100% unpredictable. Yeah. There is no pattern until you make one, and that's what makes it difficult in my personal opinion. I find it easier to catch walleyes on the 4th of July than on the walleye opener. Because of the unknowns.
Right, especially with the post-spawn issues you bumped into, which is probably why typically you get into the bass opener and then Memorial Day weekend. That's really getting to be prime time for walleyes, right?
Yeah, I love it. You know, when you mentioned Memorial Day weekend, I picture nice green cabbage, weed lines. I picture, you know, 64-degree water, maybe 68, 9-degree water, depending on all the, on the sunlight and all that. But yeah, once you get into after the first 10 to 12 days of the Minnesota opening season, things really accelerate quickly as far as predictability and patterns.
Josh, final question for you. I've been an outdoors writer in the state now for quite a while. My general sense is that fishing is pretty darn good in Minnesota. We're enjoying you know, maybe not glory days, but some of the best times we've had in, you know, the past quarter century or 30 years. What's your overall take on this, the state of fishing in Minnesota these days?
I agree with you on that. I think we're one of the best states in the Midwest for all the species, multi-species, bass, walleye, pike, everything. We've got more to offer. We've got more variety to offer. We don't just have one reservoir or one river. We've got, you know, 11,242 lakes or whatever it is. And they all have multiple ways to catch certain species on every one of them. So I do think I agree with you. I think we're right where we were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, fishing quality wise, maybe even bigger fish than we had back then. I think I've catch more bigger fish now than I did 20 some years ago, but maybe it's just because I'm more experienced. I don't know. You know, it could be that. Are all the lakes super duper duper? Now, some could use a little help, of course. They get a lot of pressure and, you know, got a couple bad hatches here and there and you got to go ups and downs. You know, everything is cyclical. But overall, we are probably the best fishing state in the country. How's that?
Certainly when you're restricting that conversation to freshwater, I have no problem with that statement. I agree. I like the fact that you point out how diverse it is. States like Florida, man, oh, man, they know how to fish down there, too. And they've got some very diverse fisheries, too, between freshwater, inshore, offshore, Keys, you know, all that going on. But I'm pretty proud of what we got cooking here in Minnesota. Josh, thanks so much for spending a segment with me. We covered a lot of ground and a good segment. We need to get you on more frequently. In the meantime, I encourage folks to check out your website, MinnesotaGuideService.com. And Josh, good luck next weekend.
Appreciate it. You too. And again, appreciate the invite and glad to help you out anytime.
All right. That was Josh Hagemeister out of St. Cloud. Check out his website, MinnesotaGuideService.com. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Kins Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleyes, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today. Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio, final segment of this week's broadcast. Hope you like our discussion here. If so, Check us out online at outdoornews.com, where you can subscribe to our print or digital versions of our content. A lot of great stuff, a lot of great stories here this week, a lot of fun ones. Some goofy stories out of Wisconsin, Tim, that I found interesting. Well, one's not goofy. One, we had a burglary at a gun shop, in Star Prairie, Wisconsin? Tiny little burg in extreme western Wisconsin, probably only 45 minutes from the Twin Cities. That's why I included it in the paper. But ATF offering a $10,000 reward for information that leads to the perps in that case.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody would want to steal guns. That's too much of a huge federal offense. They're hard to sell, unless you're going to grind off the serial numbers and try and sell them underground. It's kind of one of those things where they're going to show up, and when they do, they're going to be easy to trace, and you're going to get caught. It's probably a better idea to think of something that's not quite as tough to fence as guns to steal, because you're going to get busted. Yeah. That's one thing I would never steal is guns, drugs and all that stuff, that they really wouldn't, they're going to go after you. They're going to tooth and nail you. There's just certain things you stay away from, and boys, you're just right around the corner from getting busted here.
Another fun little story, a 19-year-old hunter, cool video, we've got it at outdoornews.com. He was turkey hunting, and a bobcat stalked him, and this kid managed to get his phone out and videotape the bobcat coming up to him, and even turned his phone so he was able to kind of show his personal expression a little bit, and then back on the cat, and the cat just kind of then finally wound up and swatted him and then bolted when he realized it was not a turkey or some other form of food. But you remember Doug Grant at Wildlife Forever, Tim? He had a similar situation out in the Black Hills. Oh man, this is in the late 90s, I think. I believe that cat actually broke skin, actually cut him a little bit. And I remember Doug saying he got more publicity out of that story than he did a lot of his Wildlife Forever work that he'd been doing for a long time. But there's a lot of big cats running around. You never know what you might encounter in the turkey woods.
Well, you don't know what you'll encounter whenever you're calling and any kind of an animal. I used to do a lot of coyote calling, and a lot of times you do this at night, and you'd get raccoons come to you, fox come to you, and the coyotes, of course, would move in as well. Skunks, just about everything you can imagine would come to that screaming rabbit call. Or the one that really would get it is the mice chirping. You get that mouse squeak with that little squeaker call. Oh, my gosh, I'd get feral cats, you name it. And I think in this particular case in Wisconsin with this guy and the bobcat was curious. He didn't know what he was looking at there. And he swatted this guy because he just wanted to get it to move, possibly to jump on it after he figured out what it was. But I think in this case, he was curious and just was taking a swat. Doug Grant, on the other hand, that animal wanted to kill Grant to eat it, I'm sure, thinking that it was some kind of an edible animal. And it was pretty cool that he got all this on video.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerison and Tim Lesmeister are bringing it home. In Minnesota, a cute little story about a wildlife photographer who got some pictures of a burrowing owl in southwestern Minnesota. Tim, that was kind of interesting. I've seen those out in the Dakotas, out in the Badlands, that country. They generally need to be in areas where you got prairie dogs and badgers and black-footed ferrets, those kind of critters. That's usually where you're going to find them. They can't dig burrows themselves. They need somebody else to actually dig the burrows. But they're a cool little owl. And, there's actually a population of them down in Florida, which is really odd to me. But they don't – historically, they were native to western Minnesota. But, of course, we don't have much for prairie dog towns out there anymore.
All the prairie dog towns in western Minnesota are gone. And this particular owl is just lost. It was heading somewhere, got turned around, and found a burrow. But it would have been cool if there was a pair of them and maybe a breeding pair, because these birds tend to go back and breed where they were born. But that's not going to happen here. It's just a single owl, and it'll be gone before you know it.
Cool photos. So we appreciate the wildlife photographer who snapped those pictures and sent them to us. Let's go down south of the border a little bit, Tim. You've got relatives down on Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri. Really nasty story out of there. We got guys catching sturgeon and carving their initials in them and then releasing them. That's pretty gross, man.
I think they're paddlefish, aren't they?
Didn't I say paddlefish? Did I say sturgeon? I'm sorry.
Yes.
You're right.
Go ahead.
Paddlefish, yeah.
Yeah, they're catching paddlefish and they're carving things into the fish, not just initials, but they're carving things in that are, you know, basically freaking people out that are catching these fish and finding these fish that some don't make it, some do. But I tell you what, that is just obscene, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, that's torturing an animal as far as I'm concerned. And the, another thing about this is that it'll get around because people will be joking about it. They'll be laughing about it. They'll be in the bar bragging about it. And I hope that they find these individuals and they do something to let them know that this is not very nice and they should be punished.
There are several local fishing guides are offering a $10,000 reward for the arrest of those responsible. We've got bait shops down there saying they've got people come in and talking about it, and they're like, we're getting out of here. This is freaky. I hope it doesn't spread because of some of the publicity associated with this story. I hope other idiot rednecks out there don't say, good idea. I think I'll do this too. I hope they catch these guys. I obscene messages and what they're doing to native wildlife, just that's a new low. I can't believe I'm even reporting this story.
How do you think up things like this? It just doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't get it. We're about out of time, Tim. I guess we should circle back and talk a little bit. We had a good commentary from Steve Rinella and Ryan Callahan, both associated with Meat Eater. They filed a commentary that Outdoor News ran talking about the U.S. Senate vote again. I'm glad to see Rinella, you know, sticking his neck out and being clear that he doesn't like how that Senate vote went and how it potentially affects the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness.
Yeah, basically what they said is that we have to step up to the plate and make sure this doesn't happen again. This is, they're using regulations, rules, laws to kind of usurp the situation that we have there to get this mining set up near the Boundary Waters Area Canoe Wilderness. And it's all because we have legislators that don't want to step away from the party line and vote their conscience. And we got to get people that are willing to do that. And so we've got elections coming up here soon. Start looking at those that have an affinity for the environment and consider them when you vote.
The president did sign House Joint Resolution 140 this past week. I don't think that's a surprise. It took, I guess, the better part of 2 weeks before he signed it. It must have been 10, 11 days anyway. So it is officially law that the moratorium has been repealed. It doesn't mean that a copper nickel mine is going to be built tomorrow, but it was removing that moratorium was a massive, massive step. You know, it was a 20-year moratorium, so it wasn't going to last forever. It was, I think we were in year three of it, year four of it. But the way that law was written that Trump just signed means there can't be another moratorium for that type of mining in the watershed. So we will we'll continue to watch that one too. Tim, where are you going to be fishing next weekend?
I'll be fishing just a little west of Lake Mille Lacs on a little lake called Smith Lake. It's
awesome.
It's full of northern pike and largemouth bass, huge crappies. I might pop over to Mille Lacs. I talked to Freshwater Fishing Hall of Famer Chris Kudek recently, and he's going to be guiding there. He said that Mille Lacs is more popular than ever right now. People still want to fish, even with the crazy limits they've got on that lake. And him and I might connect for a little time on Mille Lacs as well.
Good. Well, we'll talk more about that on next week's broadcast. Tim, thanks a lot for joining me. Have a good week ahead, my friend.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.